The following content is not suitable for children.
We're going to talk today about a sexual assessment. Last week, we talked about the emotional assessment with our partners, and we're going to, again, just talk about where you came from, what you learned about your body, what you learned about sexuality, and hopefully be able to share with your partner about this. Welcome to Foreplay Sex Therapy. I'm Dr. Lori Watson, your sex therapist.
And I'm George Fowler, your couples therapist.
We are here to talk about sex.
Our mission is to help couples talk about sex in ways that incorporate their body, their mind, and their hearts.
And we have a little bit of fun doing it, right, G?
Listen, and let's change some relationships.
Another lesson in the school of love. A lot of people never ever do this exploration, right? They feel awkward. They don't want people to think badly of them. They don't want to give information to partners. Like, this is a conversation so many couples I work with have never done with each other. And how sad, because just like that emotional history, this informs how we want to be touched, what works, what doesn't work. And if we can't actually explore it ourselves or share with our partner, like, we're leaving a lot off the table to actually connect with.
There is. And I think I always begin with couples, you know, because in the family of origin, I have a little baby in my life right now. And one of the things that I notice is just the sweetness, the gentleness of the way his parents touch him. This is my grandchild, and our grandmother's sexy. I don't know if I should talk about my grandchild. Just kidding. You know, it's so tender. You know, and of course, when you are caring for a baby, you have to clean them, you have to clean their genitals, you have to, all of that is like the respect and the gentleness that you start touching them with is the very first experience they have of their body. And that appropriate, you know, touch and all of that is really the way they start to even find their body and come into touch with, this is an okay place. My parents, their love for me, their care for me, the way they touch me, feed me, hold me, all of that is sort of foundational to actually our eventual sexual self. Because as our physical needs are met, you know, our bodies are touched, we begin to feel safe in our bodies. And that's kind of foundational, I believe, for our sexuality.
So that's the first question we're going to ask. How did your family do touch? Right? Was there good touch? Was there comforting touch? Was there soothing touch? Was there tickling touch? Like, it was touch a healthy role model in your family, something you could depend upon, something mm-hmm. that you look forward to. You know, I could think of my family, like, my mother was a good toucher. She would scratch my back as I would watch a show. And like, I just loved the way that felt. You know, I looked forward to that. And my dad didn't say much emotional words, but he was a good hugger. He'd be like, get over here. And like, so my family did pretty good with touch. And no wonder why when I came into relationships, I was looking for that. You know, I want to give it. That's like my main primary love light, which is touch.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, me too. My mother was also very good at touch. And I mean, I remember the comfort of my mother's body for sure. You know, being held to her breast when I was hurt or upset, and, you know, and she was really good about putting me to bed at night. There was a lot of back rubbing, the same sort of thing, song singing, tucking in, you know, all of that was very dependable in my, you know, early family years. And I think my dad, I remember sitting on my father's lap and, you know, that kind of thing. He wasn't quite as affectionate as my mom, but it wasn't off limits or anything like that.
It's not coincidence that Lori and I can be sexual pursuers in our relationship because we got healthy role models of touch. And both of our partners grew up in families where touch wasn't as expressive, right? Yep. And when you don't get that touch, you learn to self-soothe and self-regulate. You don't need it as much as others because your body's gotten used to kind of doing its own thing. And you could often feel pressured when you're touched because people are looking for something from you and it becomes something to do instead of something, you know, that your body
enjoy.
Enjoy. So again, there's no right or wrong to these answers. It is what it is.
But I think that what you're saying is so important. This to me, I think, is a real primary block, especially in women when they have not been touched enough. You know, as a child, any child who is not touched enough, we crave it. And so what do we do if we don't get enough of it? We kind of set this boundary, this I call it like an inner vow that says, I just won't need it. You know, in order to survive, you have to not need touch. And every child that ever lived needs copious amounts of touch. And so if you kind of set this wall up that says, well, it's not coming. You know, I'm not going to expect it. And then we get into a romantic relationship in adulthood. And it's like, okay, you know, now you want me to crave your body. You want me to have desire. That's not safe. Yeah. I think men get a second chance in life because of testosterone. You know, that it often, even if they didn't get adequate touch in childhood, they're often pushed by their body's needs to want sex. And then they, you know, it really is healing. You know, yeah. For many men, sexual touch is the healing of what they didn't have in childhood.
Well, I think with a lot of men where it could get turned off is if you don't get it, it's one thing, and then your body still longs for it. But if you wind up receiving negative messages around touch, you know, maybe it's natural to touch yourself and to like that, and you get caught touching yourself, and you know, your parents says you're going to hell if you do that. Like when we start getting strong right. messages that our touch is bad or, you know, yeah. evil, or like when we try to touch somebody and somebody doesn't like the touch, or we get molested, we get touch forced upon us. Like when we get trauma that gets attached to touch, right? It yeah. crosses the wires and it could kind of start to block this natural process.
Yeah, exactly. And you've just said 1,000 things there that I think people need to think about, you know, the messages they got about masturbation. You know, was it okay to touch themselves? Did their parents say, oh, you know, that feels nice, that area is good. You know, of course you want to touch yourself there. That's a good thing. Or like, were they caught? And then they were told, this is so bad, you're evil. And then, you know, when evil is actually foisted upon a child with inappropriate sexual touch or molestation yeah. or something, and their body is awakened sexually well before its time, and then they can feel guilty. Like not only were they violated, but they can feel guilty for their own sexual response. And that just yeah. messes you up in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, just to give that space, it crosses the wires when it's normal to like something. Somebody's giving you special attention. Like it, part of it feels good, even in molestation, even though it feels really bad and part of you knows it shouldn't be happening. And like when you get these mixed messages and you can't talk about it, it really causes some confusion. And these are the blocks that we're going to see later on in the romantic relationships. You know, they get their roots kind of back in these moments.
Yeah. So we also want to ask our partners, was there any trauma around touch? And also, what were the messages that you got about masturbation mm-hmm. and your own body? I think the next thing I want to know from people too is the messages they got about their body's development, you know, because this is an awkward time as you become a sexual creature, right? Your body develops. I mean, gosh, you know, I remember when I first started my period, George, and it was like, I thought the whole world knew. It was such a conspicuous, like self-conscious feeling. This was back in the day, maybe TMI y'all, but I was back in the day when you wore pads, you know, and, you know, I was riding my bike with this big pad and it was just like, oh, you know, I remember going up to see the boys that were my buddies and just like, what if they could see? It was just so embarrassing to me, yeah. this whole development thing.
Yeah, I was a little late bloomer, so I didn't have pubic hairs. I was a little later than some of my friends. You know, I remember they'd be showing it off. They'd pull their pants down and say, look at this. And I'd be like, you know, they'd be like, show me yours. I was like, I don't, that's stupid. I don't want to do it. But I remember the fear of being exposed, right? I'd be like, I'll punch your face if you like try like, and I have all these defenses started to be developed, you know, around something you don't talk about. This is something private.
Right.
Something, you know. So again, it's not always your family of origin. It could be that extended group that, you know, especially in this puberty phase where, you know, a lot of times it's our peers that are kind of giving us information. It's not so super accurate a lot of the time.
Especially when boys are a little bit later to bloom and girls are a little bit early to bloom. Yeah. You know, it's like our mind and our emotions haven't caught up with our body, or maybe they've exceeded our body and, you know, and our peers may be in a different place. It's really confusing. There's a lot of comparison mm-hmm. that's happening. Am I normal? I think that's the biggest question I get from people is, am I normal? And people start to have experiences about that age with opposite sex and same sex. I would say the number one secret I have heard from people throughout the years of my work as a therapist is well, you know, I played with my same-sex friends and we had sexual encounters, and they've never told anybody that, and they feel ashamed of that. Like maybe they're straight, but you know, they had experiences with the boys in the neighborhood, or they had experiences right. with their girlfriends. And it's like, you know, it turns out people who are developing and they're having all these flooding of sexual feelings and stuff, they often just kind of experiment with whoever's available. It really doesn't have anything to do with your sexual orientation. It's just kind of experimentation. And so this is a confusing time in life when we're developing and we're first starting to have sexual experiences.
And then we do want to know about that first sexual experience. That's so important, right? It might just be a crush that the first time you felt strong feelings for somebody else and maybe they didn't respond back, or, you know, maybe it was that person responded back and it was your first love. You know, I'm always surprised at how often the first sexual experience is a negative one for people. Because they don't know what they're doing, and something hurts or something goes bad, or they wind up breaking up afterwards. I mean, if your body's first taste of this intimate moment is negative, like what is the body keeps score? It holds on to that. Mm-hmm. So we really do want to know more about that first moment.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Tommy Emeterio, he was like the guy at the church group who I just was madly in love with. And I don't think he even knew I existed. You know, but I just thought he was so cute. I thought he was so cute for years, you know, and his family was lovely and all of this. And I remember that, like, again, that feeling of every time I saw him at church, just how exciting it was and what a thrill it was. You know, for all I know, I was having fantasies, and I can't quite remember having fantasies about him, but I'm sure I did, you know, because he was everything, but didn't know I existed.
But you can see the enjoyment you still get back now as you reflect upon that good feeling, you know, that fantasy, that wonder, that what if he was interested? I would love, like, that's healthy longing, yeah, right? When that's able to be expressed, you can see how the body wants to hold on to that. If that first kiss was magical, it's like you're always looking for something like that the rest of your life, that feeling of being connected and feeling the passion and not really knowing. It's just like these are the highlight reel moments, right?
That if you
have them, you wanna kind of recognize those highlight reel moments, like they're still with us.
Yeah, exactly. And also the first breakup, right? You know, if you've been sexually involved with somebody and then they break up with you, it can just kind of break your heart, or maybe you're breaking somebody else's heart, and that can be really painful too. Yeah. And especially how they react to it.
Exactly. I think this is an area we'll come back and talk about, gas pedals and brakes in romantic relationships that are so important for our current relationship.
Okay. Let's come back after break and talk some more. Okay, Rocket Money users, you know what I know. If you have found any subscriptions that you have been paying for twice and you didn't realize it, you are suddenly saving money. Rocket Money can cancel a subscription for you that is otherwise time consuming. It can alert you to an increase in subscription price and negotiate it for you. Do you know that nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about? I did. Then I started using Rocket Money, and it's just so easy peasy. I used to track that down and try to figure it out, and between streaming services and fitness apps and delivery services, it's never ending. One time I lost like $600 on a delivery service. Oh my gosh. Don't waste any more money, you guys. Save your money for date night. Seriously. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions and monitors your spending and helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year by using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/foreplay, rocketmoney.com/foreplay, rocketmoney.com/foreplay. We get the credit, you get the savings. I don't know about y'all, but I am traveling this summer a lot and bringing Foria with me because Foria has just dropped a brand new formula. It's called Massage Oil with Organic Botanicals Foyer massage oil, it can be for intimate areas. It can be for your back, your feet. Ooh, so good. Foyer massage oil, their awaken arousal oil, and their sex oil can make you and your partner feel and experience pleasure and sex in new ways. It can change the way you experience orgasm. Sensuality can start with Foyer. People, you may think you don't need the extra help, but really you will be pleasantly surprised by how much better and how much more pleasurable your relationships and sexual experiences can be. With the massage oil, spice things up by slowing things down. Foyer's Intimacy Massage Oil takes partnered intimacy to the next level with quick absorbing, desire enhancing, all natural moisture. Do you remember that first date feeling? The butterflies, the warmth, the electricity of that first time your partner touched you? Well, Foyer massage oil supports sensual touch and connection in just the same way. And use Awaken. Imagine the best orgasm or sex you've ever had. And now think about it being even better. You can have access with Awaken oil to bigger and better orgasms. Awaken uses CBD oil and warming, sensation-inducing organic botanicals that enhance arousal, sensitivity, and pleasure and give you more access to orgasm and help you with any discomfort. Best of all, it basically just turns you on. So yes, I fully endorse you to go ahead, treat yourself and your partner, use it on vacation, use it every day, experience your juiciest and deepest sensual experience with a bottle of Foyer. Foyer is offering a special deal for our Foreplay fam. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foyerwellness.com/foreplay or use the code Foreplay at checkout. That way they know it's from us. That's foyerwellness.com/foreplay for 20% off your first order. I recommend trying their massage oil combined with their Awaken Arousal oil. You will thank me later.
This one is, to me, the heart of it. Early touch is critical, but also our past sexual romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, this is where we learn a lot of our good habits and we learn a lot of our bad habits. So really taking the time to go through a couple of these, you know, relationships. So we start with the first one and what worked about it? What were the things, what were you responded to? You know, was it a crush where the other person wasn't so into you? Then it's going to have a lot more of the rejection and the hurt attached to it. But when the partner is responsive to us back, like, and we really feel like this is the only person that gets me. This is the first person in the planet who's really gotten me. My family kind of likes me. They really don't know me. I mean, if you think about that.
They have to like me. This is the first new person who likes me.
We can talk about
exciting.
Our families and how bad they are and how clueless they are. And they don't really get the world the way we do. I mean, it really is this person that's kind of all into you. Like that feeling, like the levels of engagement are off the charts. I mean, you can talk about anything. You're holding each other's hands is pretty awesome. I mean, you like the way people look at you when you're together. I mean, it's just like supercharged on so many levels.
I like to think back and I ask people to do this, like, especially I ask sexual withdrawers to do this. Like, think about the first touch. Maybe it isn't the first sex, but it's like they took your hand in the movie. And I mean, remember, it's so electric when somebody you like touches you. It's just absolutely electric. I can still think about it like going through my whole body. You know, just that wonderful feeling of the person that you like, the guy, you know, and he touches you for the first time, not even kisses you, just touches you. It's like, wow, it's amazing. Do you remember your first touch? Or maybe you were the one who touched because you were the boy. So probably you were the one who had to grab her hand or kiss her or something.
Yeah, I think my first kiss wasn't so magical. It was, you know, kind of like pushed kind of, you know, spin the bottle and just kiss the strange person just to kind of do it kind of thing. And I didn't know what I was doing. She didn't know what she was doing. It was awkward. But you could advance, and I can remember my first girlfriend that I really had strong feelings for, and like just sitting at the mailbox for like hours, and like I don't know what we talked about. And every once in a while, you throw a kiss in there. It's like that's all you care about, right? And
the world stops. Yeah.
But notice what you're getting, right? That we want to look at our current relationship, that those levels of engagement, the interest, the amount. You always say this, like people were very intentional. They were investing so much into this, these moments with each other. They weren't taking it for granted. Like they were so present that we're trying to look, how can we get that more in our current relationship? And the best way of doing that is let your body remember moments when it has felt this. To be able to tap it. It's not a foreign language. It's not like something you've lost and can't get back. It's there. If your body remembers it, that's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The flip side is, though, I also remember that first girlfriend. You know, for whatever reason, we were great for like a month that seemed like forever back then. And then all of a sudden one day she was like, yeah, no, I don't want to go out anymore. I was like, what? And I had to pretend I didn't care either. Like, yeah, I didn't care. But on the inside, I was like, devastated, but that I didn't talk about that feeling, right? I didn't want people to evaluate me. So I learned right at an early age, when you feel that, hide it. Don't share it. It'll be used against you. Pretend it's no big deal. You're cool. Go on to the next one. And like, that's what I did. It wound up working pretty well for me. But, you know, look at what that does for me moving into relationships.
Right. It trains your body to not feel, to not talk about it, to not get any comfort. You're all alone there. You know, yeah, that's a painful thing. It's a painful training.
Yeah.
But I think not only maybe your family of origin, but as a male, I think there's a lot of pressure in our culture for men not to show when they have a heartbreak.
Yeah.
You know, more than for women. Yeah.
I think it's changing a little bit. I can see with my sons, they're a little bit more open. The boys talking to each other about these things. And it was for me. I mean, I would be teased. It'd be like, who cares? Get out. Like, it was a totally different response.
Right. Right. Different generation. Yeah, I agree. My sons too talk to their friends about things like that as well, which is so beautiful. I'm so grateful for my sons having their friend group. You know, it's a group of young men who are the coolest guys, and they actually talk about their relationships and all kinds of things. So that's beautiful.
Yeah. And as we get into these relationships, you know, we want to get more into specifically around the sex, right? Mm-hmm. What was the sex? And a lot of times, because we're young and new, we can take more risks. We have less inhibitions. So a lot of times the sex can be the most amazing sex we've ever had at this early age. Mm-hmm. And for others, it's the opposite. It's like, because we don't know what we're doing. We don't know our body. We have so many inhibitions and hangups. Like, the sex is really bad, right? And, you know, we can't have an orgasm. It hurts. The other person doesn't know what they're doing. And you can see how good early sex is going to influence how our body responds to sex.
Yeah, I really think that first full sexual experience is kind of like a bit of a template. You know, and it almost has to be overcome or something, you know. I ask this question on my assessment forms for everybody who comes through my center. So we have thousands of examples of people's first sex experience. And I think that a lot of women do not have positive first sex experiences. You know, it hurts. They're virgins. They don't know how to make sex comfortable because they don't have enough knowledge. And it actually turns out, just for the record, y'all, that virgin sex for a woman can be comfortable, but they don't know how to do that. They don't speak up. They don't ask. I think many young people don't say what they like. Maybe they don't know what they like. Maybe they've never masturbated, or God forbid that they would tell somebody that. But I think the men that I see often do experience like a joyful, exciting moment. Maybe they don't know what they were doing, but they still find it joyful. And usually they do have orgasms.
Well, I've had a lot of men know their first encounter, they've had really premature ejaculation. That was very
right.
So that wasn't such
50%. 50%, George, I think, of men, their first sexual experience have premature ejaculation. But, I mean, you think about it, like, it makes so much sense. It's like, I mean, they're so excited. Like, of course they're going to come like that. That would be so natural.
On to that, if the partner was okay, it was no big deal. But if the partner was shaming, right, then that becomes a very different reality.
Yeah, different experience, yeah.
You know, and this is, in the break department, we do want to understand, unfortunately, there is a lot of rape, abuse, molestation, that happened
around date rape.
And what is that?
Coercion.
Right. What does that teach about?
Right.
Or,
right.
You know, infidelity, when it feels like this one person you've given your heart to and you have found this amazing thing, and then you find out they're with somebody else and you're not that special. Right. So some of the worst hurts we're ever going to experience are going to happen exactly in this area.
Right. Right. When we're fresh and new. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and I think, again, the stats are obscene about how many young women before their age of 18 will experience molestation, rape, date rape, coercive sexual experiences. And we know now, because it's beginning to be talked about, that boys too experience quite a bit of molestation and coercion about sex. And generally for boys, it is a man who is molesting them. And so that can, you know, if they're straight, it can be really confusing in terms of their sexual orientation because their body has been touched and formed sort of a pattern. So, I mean, a lot of men feel a lot of shame over having been molested because it was also same sex and they consider themselves straight. So they don't talk about it. They don't get over that. I mean, especially now with all the, you know, the church revelations of kids being molested in the schools and sports and, you know, everything, every organization, kids, Boy Scouts, kids are vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really awful.
Those three levels, you know, you got the early family, how did they do touch? You got the early adolescent, young adult, first romantic relationships, how we learn our body
and peers.
Encounters. Yeah. And then you got that third phase, like, you know, college and afterwards. A lot of people do have patterns in their romantic relationships, mm-hmm. you know, around sex or how they start or how they break up. You know, I was working with one guy. He's like, I don't understand why, you know, girls always wind up leaving, right? And like when that happens a lot, you can see how you're going to carry that insecurity into this present relationship.
Yeah.
Or, you know, another guy I was working with, it's like, yeah, I never find the right one. Like I'm always kind of into a girl, but they find something that I kind of don't like, and then I just break up with them because it's just something missing. It's something I'm missing. Like, okay, well, and what are these relationships looking like sexually? You know, what are the things that work in those relationships? You know, I had this one relationship. We didn't get along before all the time, but the sex was great. And then on my next relationship, I really liked this person. We had good friends, but we had really boring sex. Like, why is that? There's information to be gleaned in these relationships.
Right. Yeah. And hopefully, I mean, I think this is one thing is people sometimes go through their relationship history and they just, you know, well, that one's over, but they don't necessarily analyze it to learn what they can learn about it. Yeah. So, okay. So last question, right? We want you to share, if you can, your sexual history and relational history with your partner. I one caveat, you know, some people are partnered with somebody who is extremely jealous and it wouldn't be safe to share with them, or they would become jealous of that. And so we're not saying do something because we've told you to in a relationship that isn't safe. You got to make sure that your partner is open to that and willing to, you know, be curious about the lessons that the two of you can learn from that. And if you can't share with your partner, hopefully you have shared your relational history and learned what you can about it with a therapist or with another friend.
Absolutely. That ability to reflect, to know yourself better, what turns you on, what turns you off, the more you can communicate that, the better the chances you having great sex with your partner and finding that safety. So a lot of the information does go back, and your ability to be curious about yourself and your partner, right? I joke around with my wife and I'm like, oh, she never had a boyfriend before me. I was her first boyfriend. I don't want to hear about those things, right? But it's not a good response. I know that. We're working on it, right? But really trying to remind yourself, like, it's a normal thing for people to be in relationship and to like other people until they found you, right? That's not a reflection on you. Right. And but I love that you're giving people permission. If you don't want to talk about this because you're not in a place that your relationship's too fragile, you don't want more things to think and stress about, then talk about the childhood. You know, talk about, you know,
talk about things that are safe.
that are safe? What the cultural messages people that you've seen around sex? What are the religious messages you've received around sex? I mean, there's so much here in our history that, you know, we just don't often think to talk to our partner about. And what a missed opportunity, because there's richness here. There's stuff to engage with. There's just such fun stuff.
We don't have time today. I wish we did to explore all the impact of those other cultural and religious messages that we get. And maybe we need to do another podcast on that, because those are important too. Still working through that one. Okay, y'all, thanks for listening.
Keep it hot, baby.
Okay, so tell us about your cutting edge training that you're doing on success and vulnerability.
Lori, we just keep pushing it. Coming up with a new module on the playbook of a pursuer, playbook of a withdrawer, really practical moment by moment moves of what a therapist can use. You know, we're so focused on what's happening in session. Enough there's talk about theories and these global things. I think most therapists are looking for, what do I do in this moment? Give me a tool, George. So that's what we're trying to do.
That's awesome. I am so glad you guys are doing this work. I think it helps us be organized to see you do it. You do demos, you do explanations, teaching. It really is interactive. And I think that so many trainings that we sit through don't give us an opportunity for that. So what you're doing is really important.
No, we try to emphasize the teach it, show it, do it model of learning. Right, you need to have some ideas, so we try to teach those. And then we try to show what it looks like implementing those ideas. But most importantly, you now got to practice it. That's how they become yours. And that's what we want our listeners and watchers to do, is become their own moves.
Find George and his teaching at successandvulnerability.com.
Call in your questions to the 4Play question voicemail. Dial 833-MY-4PLAY. That's 833-MY-4PLAY. And we'll use the questions for our mailbag episodes. All content is for entertainment purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for therapy by a licensed clinician or as medical advice from a doctor. This podcast is copyrighted by 4Play Media.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.